welcome everybody. This is a very special broadcast for my Special Investigators series. I'm very happy to welcome Catherine Austin Fitz for a mind-blowing interview about finance and financial regulation. As many of you know, she was the Assistant Secretary for Housing under George Bush, and she saw firsthand what is going on in government. She uncovered the missing trillions, the black budget, and traced it. So she is, in my books, the biggest brain in finance who can really tell us what's wrong with our systems and what to do about it. So please join me in welcoming Catherine Austin Fitz.
Hello, Dr. Catherine. Dr. Horton, always a pleasure.
So let's dive right into it. Can you give us a very quick summary about what happened to you and what you saw when you were working in government?
Well, I started off as Assistant Secretary of Housing during the first Bush administration, and then I left and started an investment bank in Washington called Hamilton Securities Group that was later hired back on competitive contract to the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And I was part of a contractor group that was helping a group of pretty honest government officials try and clean up the housing programs. And what we ran into was the fact that our plans to provide transparency to citizens that would help them re-engineer their money for digital technology and change, which we were doing on a private basis, or our help having the government officials run the mortgage programs of the country honestly, were really running smack dab into the desire by the leadership to have a housing bubble that would allow them to pull a great deal of money out of the economy for a variety of purposes, let's call it globalization and the black budget. And so the central bank and the top banks wanted to run the mortgage programs on a fraudulent basis, and we were trying to help a group of government officials run them clean, and so the two ran into each other. As you can tell, the central bank and the bankers won. And it was a period, I call it the financial coup, because you had a period of enormous securities fraud, really engineered at the highest levels of government and central banks, and it was part of the wave of globalization that hit after they created the WTO in 1995. And think of it this way, you take an enormous amount of money out of the developed economies and you shift it, whether you shift it into the black budget or you shift it into, you know, picking up equity cheap around the world. And so, it was basically global privatization on a Jesuit method is another way of looking at it. Anyway, so what happened to me was... We were doing two things, I think, that offended. One was we were helping the government officials run the mortgage programs clean, and that had to, you know, that couldn't stand if you're going to have a housing bubble. But the other thing we were doing was we were creating software tools that would allow citizens, particularly small business in a place, to understand how all the government money works in a place. So what you will find in America is the average citizen has no idea what the sources and uses of federal government money in their county is. And directly or indirectly, it's more than 50% of the money. So it's a very socialized economy. But people are remarkably ignorant. If I'm going to have any kind of democratic process or vote, then I need the kind of disclosure to understand how the money works. Otherwise, my vote, you know, I can't hold my representatives accountable because I don't have the equivalent of a financial statement. And it was the work on that kind of bottom-up transparency. I should also mention part of our goal was to realign living systems with the financial system, right? As of the mid-90s, the financial system was really run top-down and is designed to centralize. It's not designed to produce optimal wealth. And what we realized is if we realign the financial system with living systems so that people can literally make money healing the environment, you can get dramatically greater wealth. The problem with that system, of course, is it's much harder to control centrally. Although now with digital technology of the kind that you've been covering, you know, maybe you can do both. I think is where they may be going with this. But needless to say, so then I ended up litigating with the federal government for sort of squabbling with them for an 11-year period. And then when that was over, I started this Leary report because I still believe you've got to bring transparency to the money. Now, I want to step back and talk about the Department of Housing and Urban Development, both in when I was assistant secretary and then when I was lead finance. We were the lead financial advisor to HUD for several years. I used to, if you look at the law related to the Federal Housing Administration, the Federal Housing Administration is a large mortgage insurance operation, and the single family operation is required by law to be run on a self-supporting basis. I used to try and get the data necessary to do that when I was both Assistant Secretary of Housing and as well as a contractor trying to help the people who work for the Assistant Secretary of Housing. And what you would discover is the contractors controlled a lot of the data, and it was a real food fight to get that data. And that process clued me into the fact that the federal government is not run by government employees. It's run by big contractors. So I've done a lot of work disclosing $21 trillion that's gone missing from both the Department of Defense and HUD, $20 trillion the Department of Defense, $1 trillion from HUD. And what you'll discover when you dig down that the people who run the payment and investment and information systems is a combination of the big defense contractors and the big banks. And literally, government employees are not in control of the system. So one company that we've been talking about is when I first got to HUD, the contractor running the information and payment systems, I think at the time they were getting approximately $150 million a year, which in 1989 was a lot of money, was Lockheed Martin. Lockheed Martin is by, I think, as much as 50% the biggest contractor in the U.S. government, runs huge operations throughout the U.S. government, including payment and information systems. In 2000, at the end of 2015, when $6.5 trillion went missing, it spun its what appears to be its government operations off into a new company. I posted something that says Lockheed cuts and runs. Now, if you look at yesterday, I went into Lockheed Martin's website and got their annual proxy statement. The annual proxy statement is under SEC law. The annual proxy statement is the statement that says, describes who's in the governance system, who's on the board, and who are the lead investors. And I was interested in doing that because one of the very credible whistleblowers who's talked about targeted individuals is Karen Stewart, and she's had an experience identifying Lockheed. Maybe you could describe it.
Yes, so Karen in 2017 hired a private investigator to investigate her targeting by NSA, and the private investigator discovered that her targeting was related to Lockheed Martin as well as the NSA, and that Lockheed Martin was running the gang stalking in 47 out of 50 states. This was the upshot, which she reported in 2017. And since then, she passed me the report by the private investigator, who I should say was also retaliated against for doing this piece of work for Karen.
You know, it's interesting because I had gang stalking during the litigation, and I became convinced based on the patterns. So there was also energy weaponry, and there was gang stalking. And I became convinced based on the patterns that they were on a cost-plus contract. And I won't bore you with the details, but knowing a lot about government contracting, they were working in 8-hour shifts, and you could tell, somebody working on a cost-plus contract has reason to want to run the costs up as much as possible. So my strategies all depended on blowing their budget for their cost-plus contract, because what I figured is if I can cause them to have to go in for a reauthorization, they're not going to get the reauthorization. So I came up with a pattern of living in four places on an unpredictable schedule that was totally designed to blow their budget. And so, I think it succeeded, but my conclusion from that was that whoever was doing it was a government contractor on a cost-plus contract.
Do you know the 8-hour shift? I can confirm I've observed this as well.
Right.
You could even tell the differences between different shifts coming on, and newbies would be particularly aggressive. And yes, absolutely. People also say that Lockheed Martin is the biggest private intelligence agency in the world, and in actual fact is bigger than the U.S. Intelligence agency. Right. Would you think that's true?
It wouldn't surprise me if it was true. If you look at what Lockheed does, by definition, they have to have massive intelligence. And my guess is that that if you look at Lockheed's basic intelligence operations, it's probably superior to almost anything in government. Now, it depends on to what extent Lockheed has access to all the NSA databases, which I suspect it probably does.
Yes, and the other thing that was revealed by Richard Lighthouse in a recent interview is that Lockheed Martin used to own the satellite control systems and then passed it back to Air Force Base Schriever in the, I think, the 1990s.
Right.
So this means that they developed the technology, and once you pass your own technology to somebody else, your knowledge of it is typically superior because you developed it.
Well, the other thing is, if you look, my understanding, I remember being in Australia a couple years ago and was told that the Australian defense systems had just been turned over to Lockheed Martin. So, and it was interesting, literally the week after 9/11, Lockheed suddenly put out press releases saying that it had suddenly won the systems contract for all these retail companies, particularly ones that do, you know, like Land's End and Tom's of Maine, and, you know, it's like, whoa, what's this about? To the victor go the spoils, right? So, Lockheed, on the systems basis, has moved, my guess is, vertically around the world to sort of globally network many of the different defense systems.
And I think the first one they certainly own is the entire Five Eyes architecture.
Really?
I think, yes, I think so. Because Lockheed is a big player in the United Kingdom, and once you combine Australia, UK, and the US, that is pretty much the Five Eyes backbone.
Well, and this gets back to the ionized sky. Who has access? The winner in artificial intelligence is the team that has the most data. And the team that has the most data is the team that ionizes the sky.
That's right, yeah.
So, which gets you back to satellites and the nanoparticles of, you know, whatever digital dust is in the spring. So Lockheed, you know, when I look at the U.S. government, I don't look at 21 government agencies. I look at a set of information and data architecture and who has access to that information and data architecture. So let me give you another example. One of the richest database architectures in the world is the central banks. So I remember in the early 2000s, I emailed and called all the 12 banks in the Federal Reserve System and says, you know, who manages your data? Who provides your information systems? And do your members have access to your data? What's the access policies? And they wrote back and said, that's all private information. But that is one of the richest. Now, you know, it would be very interesting to see whether Lockheed has a hand in those systems as well.
I would say so. I mean, once you have the scale that you're running the databases for the U.S. government,
right?
You know, once you're running the database systems that support the satellite systems, and once you run the interactive database, I should say, active live databases that coordinate the gang stalking across the U.S.,
right?
You must be involved.
Well, here's the thing. If you look at I'll never forget talking to the reporter who had broken the sarin gas story, and then it had it suppressed by CBS. And what she said to me is, look, the military controls the satellites, and if you get cut off from your satellites, you know, your business goes down. You know, so you're dancing on a platform that they control. And so this comes back to the hardware always. Who controls the hardware, and who can force their way on the hardware? And Lockheed has a very significant role, whether it's satellites, payment systems, information systems, you know, and to what extent they've spun some of it off, you don't know. The reason I go back to the investors is one of my favorite books that informs real solutions is a book called The Evolution of Cooperation by Robert Axelrod. And he talks about the importance of accountability on a personal level and points out that if you have true transparency so people can tell who's doing what, you absolutely can evolve a society and an economy that evolves towards peace. But you need, if I can do evil and still be socially respectable, then crime pays. However, if people can see that I'm doing criminal things that are harmful to other people, by and large, they will tend to shun. And so it's exceptionally important to have disassociation between who's really doing the criminal acts and making money doing criminal acts and the general population. So if you look at the proxy statement for Lockheed Martin, what you realize is you have a series of very prominent financial institutions, including financial institutions that go out of their way to promote, you know, what I would call ESG investing, environmentally, socially, and governance. We just had the head of one of the largest investors in the world, BlackRock, announce the head of BlackRock wrote a letter to CEO saying, you know, we have to behave responsibly. This is very important, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and so there's a feedback loop that's never happened to say to the lead investors in Lockheed Martin, you know, we have reason to believe that you're financing. I mean, forget Lockheed for a second. If Karen's private investigator was correct, if those allegations are correct, then the, you know, the largest investors in the world are financing human torture. There's a direct link.
That's right, yes.
Right. I think it's time we ask them the question, why are you financing human torture? We know, let me step back, we know the federal government has issued guidance, and I would say it's not legal, but they've done it, that says the Department of Defense can classify projects by an unknown process by unknown people. So they are allowed to cook their books in a secret process, and the people who cook their books can remain secret. Okay, so that's an infinite amount of money to do things like human torture and targeting. We also know that the president has delegated responsibility for waiving SEC requirements to the national security director, which means that companies like Lockheed Martin can cook their books. And supposedly it's all legal now, I think under the Constitution. I don't believe this is legal. But nevertheless, they have set up a process where government contractors and the government can spend an infinite amount of money on a secret basis with no accountability, which means they absolutely can finance gang stalking and torture. They've created a financial model that will allow them to do human torture, human abuse on scale.
And I would say also human murder, because the targeting is not to make the victims healthier. The goal is always either suicide, induced suicide, forced suicide of the victims to just escape the torture, or people just die from the injuries of the directed energy weapons.
Well, you've read my book, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits. One of the reasons I objected to what was happening in the 90s was because we were instituting Nazi slave labor camps in the United States. We were bringing drugs into the neighborhood, then we're dropping teams, enforcement teams, and rounding up innocent kids and stuffing them in prison. This is the Eric Holder Express. And, you know, it was done under the Clinton administration. I'll never forget one of the deputy assistant secretaries said to me, black people are hopeless. This was in 1994. Black people are hopeless. We've given up on them. We're moving them out, and we're bringing in Hispanics. Just like that. And then, sure enough, they started Operation Safe Home at HUD, and the Department of Justice and HUD were dropping SWAT teams, rounding up kids, and this is when they started the private prisons. And so the investors were making money. The private prison stocks were going up as they swept these kids into prison with government contracts. And then And then you could gentrify the community. So the Democrats and Republicans were both making money on the real estate. Everybody was really excited about how much money they were going to make. You know, and here was Catherine Austin Fitz being difficult and pointing out that Nazi slave labor camps never turn out well.
That's right. And right. You were proven right, because they, I think by now, have given up on the Hispanics. And they have given up on the entirety of the U.S. Didn't you quote somebody who said, it's too late, they have given up on the U.S., they're moving the money out to far
Asia. Right, and I think the leadership had gotten so frustrated with the inability to effect a financially responsible solution within the political process that they just said, that's it, we're pulling money out. You know, they just shifted to the just do it method. They said, and it's what I call the red button problem. So I've talked a lot about the red button problem. But, you know, what had happened so far was that there was no Democratic support for financial responsibility. And the problem when you're in Washington, and I saw this many times, is everybody wants more for them, you know. And so it was impossible to craft a financially responsible solution. I think the leadership just said, that's it, we give up. You know, we're just going to take all the money and run. So why spend money on nursing homes when you can pull all the money out and spend it on space?
Gosh, this is absolutely breathtaking. And, you know, it's the first big realization, I think, for people who don't have your level of insight is to wake up to the fact that the government is an illusion, and in actual fact, it's run by a private corporation.
There is no government. It was very funny. When I first got to HUD, I'd been told there was a gentleman who was in the field offices who was considered to be the smartest Mandarin. You know, so the SES class is a Mandarin elite, and they're extraordinary. They're very, very smart, very capable. You know, it's Bill Binney was the SES equivalent at NSA. These are remarkable people, just remarkable. And part of the reason they end up in government as opposed to Wall Street or in private sector is because they can play with so much stuff. You know, it's big. But you get these from our, anyway, so this guy, we'll call him Sam. Sam was said to be the smartest Mandarin at HUD, and he was. He was amazing. He was just amazing. Anyway, after he left in the early 2000s, I said to him, you know, there's nobody at HUD, there's no government employee who knows what's going on. They're all gone. The whole thing is being run by contractors. And he said, no way. I said, I dare you to find a government employee at HUD who understands credit reform and the budget and these issues in the budget and the missing money, you know, because at that point, I think there was, I don't know, maybe half a trillion missing at HUD by that point. And so Sam literally, he said, I'm going to prove you wrong. And as he was traveling around the country for business, he would stop and talk to people, or he'd get to Washington, he'd talk to people. And he called me and he said, let's go have dinner at Red Lobster. I'm coming through Jackson, Tennessee. So I went down to Red Lobster and we had dinner. And he was mortified. He was white. He said, I could not find one person in the entire HUD system who has any idea how the money works at HUD. He said, it's all gone. It's all controlled by contractors.
You know, the same process you describe is typical for systems. It's called deep capture. And once you have deep capture by organized crime, they want to take over functioning systems from these high-ability people, but then they want to remove them and replace them by clueless staff.
Right. Well, it's very interesting because I had said on the Salera report about a year ago, they want to do... Okay, so privatization is when I take an asset and I transfer it to the private sector at market price. So let's say a building is worth $1 million. I sell it. I held an auction. I sell it to somebody in the private sector in a competitive process for $1 million. That's privatization. Piratization is when I do an inside deal and sell it to them for $100,000. Piratization, okay? So it's below market prices. Or you transfer liabilities without getting proper compensation. Okay, so I said, watch. They want to piratize and strip out because they've stolen as much money, you know, as the securities fraud can bear for the moment. But there's national parks, there's land, there's buildings. You know, they're going to try and steal the rest, and they're going to use piratization to do it. But to do that, they've got to break down the SES system. Well, the QAnon op comes out, and suddenly, you know, the problem, the deep state, is the SESs, and we have to destroy them. Which, you know, it's an inversion of the truth. Because the SES system, not to say that it hasn't been corrupted, but the SES system in many respects is the one thing standing between, you know, the corporate sector that's licking its chops and the and those assets. I don't know if you saw it, the Koch brothers just donated $25 million to Utah State University to come up with a whole new group of people. They're going to have a say over who gets hired and how they're managed. Who's going to come up with all the different intellectual arguments for privatizing the national land.
I mean, what you describe is the American version of the rape of Russia, is it not?
Yeah.
It's the same business plan.
Yeah, but it's going to be done at a much more sophisticated level. Although the fires in California weren't particularly sophisticated. The mind control surrounding them has been remarkable and very sophisticated. But if you look at what's happening now with the end of net neutrality and what can be done through the systems, both targeting, mind control, or just manipulation of information flows or people's time, you know, the rape of Russia can happen on a much more sophisticated, invisible level. Not to say that it will be. I mean, it could also... I think you heard the story of the presentation I heard out at the Aspen Institute.
Which one is that? Which presentation? Oh,
there's a gentleman running for president on the Libertarian ticket who was taking anonymous Bitcoin donations. I don't know how you run for president and take anonymous Bitcoin donations, but that was his story. And he gave a presentation that was one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen. And luckily, Harry Blaser was there. He's my witness. And the speech is up on the internet. He said, I'm going to become president. And then by executive order, I'm going to shut down the U.S. government. And then I'm going to take all the remaining assets and auction them off. So I stood up and I said, well, you know, actually, this plan was called the Rape of Russia. They did it in Russia. Approximately 25 million people died. So I said, let me explain what is going to happen. Essentially, what's going to happen, 50% or more of the income in every county in America comes directly or indirectly from the federal government. So overnight, you're going to shut down 50% of the income flows in 3,100 counties. Now, in those counties, people have 3 weeks of food, 3 weeks of cash, and can go for 3 weeks without eating. But then after 9 weeks, you're going to have die-off, which is how we get estimates of millions of people dying in Russia. Now, when you auction off all the assets, you're going to be able to auction them off at 10 cents on the dollar because you're going to crash the whole economy. So this is Goldman Sachs' wet dream. So the guy says, well, you know, it's time we lived on less. You know, we just, you know, we'll create money with Bitcoin and, you know, it'll all work out. So then Harry Blaser gets up and says, you know, because everybody's clapping. And you're in the Aspen Institute. I forget what the name of the auditorium is. It's the Koch brothers or Booz Allen auditorium. And all these people are talking about, we're going to have a revolution. I said, we're going to have a revolution in the Booz Allen Hamilton auditorium? I don't think so. So Harry gets up and he says, okay, so everybody in this room whose parents or grandparents or family get a military pension, a social security check, Medicare and Medicaid. We all want that to stop and go away. Is that what you're saying? And everybody was, you know, there was a profound disassociation. They didn't seem to understand, okay, 50% of they and their family's income was going to stop cold turkey.
Do you know, when you tell the story, knowing what I know now, I would also assume that the, you know, the Booz Allen auditorium is also fitted with neurotechnology, where you're just being kept in a happy, happy state and just entirely, you know, open to suggestion.
Although, you know, what I will tell you is, so many people in America are used to these kinds of conversations being in the entertainment space.
That's true as well. Yes,
and not being real. they don't understand. And I think what this guy was doing, whether he knew it or not, was basically running trial balloons.
Yes.
He was running trial balloons for the CIA, and he didn't realize it. So,
Do you not realize it in the Aspen Institute? I mean, you know.
Well, here's the thing. What we saw a year later, after I started saying this, was we've seen a real effort to go after the SEC, SES system as part of the QAnon op. So the deep state is the SES system. Let's tear it apart. And in the latest reorganization proposals from the White House, you have OPM being torn apart and all sorts of... I think the military is taking back control of part of the OPM system. I don't understand the details of it. But there's real messing with the infrastructure, whether it's the running things by the, you know, the corporate contractors, whether it's putting the corporate contractors outside of the SEC law and the agencies. Because if you have corporate contractors running agencies and those agencies are not required to file financial statements as, you know, under generally accepted accounting principles, but can classify an infinite amount of stuff, I'm assuming it's the contractors who will control what gets classified and what doesn't, or might. And then you're talking about companies that can make massive amounts of money without reporting where they're getting the money under SEC law. And they're able to basically force the government to print that money and give it to them for whatever they want to do. Yeah. And it gets worse than that, because if you look at how the missing money works, you know, you're basically selling treasury securities to the pension funds, and then you're moving that money. I sell a treasury to your pension fund, a treasury security. I take the money, I put it in the government, it disappears out the back door to a private corporation who's running things on an out-of-control basis. And then I turn around to your pension fund, and what do you have? You no longer have a security in an entity that has that money. It's disappeared. Now what you have is a security for which your beneficiaries as taxpayers are liable. So you've turned an asset into a liability. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. And so basically you're turning the governmental mechanism into a laundry that's stealing the pension funds of America.
It's organized crime.
Yeah.
And add to that what you sent me, that now government officials are officially allowed to lie. I thought there was an article that they are now allowed to lie. So they, not only do they not have to declare anything and not produce
right.
accounts, they are also entitled to lie to their heart content. Well,
so one of the reasons this is a problem is it's very hard. A major government position in Washington is very hard. And it's very valuable as a government official to say, no, I can't do that. That's the law. You know, there's a process and we have to follow the process. When you can't do that, when there's no infrastructure to back you up, you have no ability to say no. And then things really rip out of control, which I think to more or less is how. You have no, there's no real governance process and you're just at the mercy of whoever's got the gun. So I don't think it's a, you know, I think this makes day-to-day management extremely challenging and difficult for anybody, you know, who would just like to run it efficiently. I don't think it's, I think it makes life in Washington or running of these operations, it makes it much harder to perform excellently because it's like trying to hold up a body with no backbone. You're in a lawless situation. And, you know, it's sort of like political warlords.
You know, I think it's what I see on the ground. I would say it's almost, I mean, it is already much worse because you mentioned the U.S. government running concentration camps, and what this is building up to be is a big, massive Holocaust, you know.
Well, I wouldn't say they were running concentration camps. I would say they were running slave labor camps.
Yeah, but... You know, I mean, if we now add in the directed energy weapons and, you know, a goal to kill off quite a few people as a business plan.
If you take GMOs, heavy schedules of vaccines, fluoride in the water, and then whatever.
5G, directed energy weapons, targeting.
EMF radiation. Mm. You know, you're talking about basically the debasement of the immune system and significant. Then you add the spray, the global spraying. What you're doing is you're diminishing the immune system and you're raising the toxicity levels. Now, let me get back to investors. We have a major push, including by the head of the BlackRock, for what's called ESG, environmental, social, governance criteria for investment. All of the things we're talking about have yet to be connected back to the investors. You know, my dream is that 5% of the population every year, particularly who own securities, go to the annual meetings and say, why are you financing the torture of American citizens? Human rights, right? This is a human rights issue. Why are you doing this? It's time to connect the dots back to the investors.
What do you think is the quickest mechanism to connect the dots? Would it be maybe court cases and massive, claims for damages rolling towards them?
The first thing you need to do is transparency, okay? So let me suggest things. Everybody's different, so everybody should do what gives them energy. But the first thing you can do is you can, for any company that's associated with this, anytime we can trace this back to a corporate government contractor, if the contractor is publicly traded, then they file documents with the SEC. So you can go to the SEC and get their documents. Usually they have it in the investor relations section on their webpage. Their annual proxy will tell you who's on the board of directors, and it will tell you who the lead investors are that own more than 5 or 10% of the company. Okay? Then if you buy a share, you can proceed to go to the annual meeting and you can ask questions. You can stand up and say, you know, why are you doing this? You can write a letter. You can write a letter to the head of investor relations. You can write a letter to all the board members. Why are you doing this? You know, and simply bring transparency to it. So one thing you can do is do that. You can ask those investors, because many of the investors who will own shares in Lockheed Martin have massive investments in treasury securities. And you can simply say to them, there's $21 trillion missing from the U.S. government. You're a major dealer in treasury securities. Why are you not asking questions? Why are you not doing anything?
Absolutely. Do they have a legal liability to inquire if there's any, even a whiff
Absolutely.
Of mishandling?
Absolutely. But there's also a tremendous conflict of interest. Why are you financing this contractor running the payment systems in a way that's disappearing money when you have a fiduciary obligation as an investor for these treasury securities?
This is actually a question I meant to ask you, because if Lockheed is running the databases and the payment systems for the U.S. government, and you have this huge black budget and trillions...
Well, remember, they were running big systems at DOD until they spun. I think they spun that division off after 2015. I don't know the details of what... It was very interesting. For many years, I was working with a reporter from Inside Magazine who was doing stories on the missing money. And she kept asking for the contracts, both DOD and General Accounting Office. No one would. And I don't know if you've ever seen the famous video of Cynthia McKinney demanding the contracts, but that's what they would sit on. They don't want you to know corporate responsibility.
Exactly.
Right.
So, based on your insight, who do you think is the most likely contender? Is it Lockheed who would be running that system?
Well, simply because Lockheed is so huge.
Yeah.
Lockheed is, and because of Karen's, the report that Karen received, I think Lockheed is one you want to look at. One of the companies that I brought a lot of transparency to that I thought was so important during my litigation was DynCorp. And I think DynCorp, for a variety of reasons, is certainly worth looking at in detail. But anybody who's got big information systems responsibilities, IBM, of course, because they did the Holocaust databases, but they, my understanding is they're the lead contractor on smart meters, or one of them, as well as on the census.
That is mind-blowing.
Yeah. So I think the census... One of my concerns is the census being used to create the perfect database of everybody and everything you know, all businesses, all people, all homes. And if you tie that, if you're paying the same contractors, you're doing the software and the smart meters, smart appliances, smart grid, and how does that dovetail with 5G? The other one I would look at very, very closely is AT&T. I had multiple experiences with AT&T, both when I was at Hamilton Securities and then since then. And I would look at them very, very... So I would look at AT&T very closely. I would look at IBM very closely. I would look at Lockheed Martin very closely. I'd look at Dynaco very closely. But there, it's pretty easy to get a list of the top 100 government contractors and, you know, what agencies they work for. Now, I think a lot is classified. So, you know, I think the most interesting things are going on in all of these secret budgets and classified projects. But I think we know enough about who's who and what they're doing so that we can start asking these questions.
The other question I had is, so we discussed the who is maintaining the database systems. Now, the question is, do you have any insight into to whom the missing trillions might have gone? Would that be Lockheed again as a recipient, you know, as a contractor as well? Because they are one hand running the database systems of the entire U.S. government, and at the same time, they're also one of the major contractors in all areas. So would they have been the recipients of the...
Okay, so let's stop for a second of talking about the defense contractors mm-hmm. who are running the hardware, mm-hmm. and let's talk about the banks. Because all the money, you know, it's like Istanbul. Everybody going to or from the Silk Road has to go through Istanbul, you know. And the New York Fed is basically Istanbul in the financial system, if you will. So one of my favorite stories about the financial system, I was interviewing Helen Chapman, who was a very successful New York attorney, brilliant woman. And she had been a Madoff victim, and her business had slowed down at the same time that Madoff went down. And so she started to help all the victims, just, you know, to help. And all of a sudden, she found herself being one of the lead attorneys involved, you know, litigating against Madoff and the trustee on behalf of the victims. So I was interviewing her for the Salera report. We're in the middle of the interview, and I said, she was describing the fact that Madoff had two businesses in the 90s. One was a brokerage business and one was the investment advisory, and that's where the 60 plus billion had gone through and disappeared. So I said to her, Helen, you know, they had one bank account at J.P. Morgan Chase. Who was the securities custodian? And she said there was none, because no one ever bought any securities. He never bought any securities, so there was no custodian. So I said, wait a minute, $60 billion went into this one bank account, and it never went out to buy securities. And I said, Helen, J.P. Morgan Chase was the senior partner, because they knew. And under the law, if something wrong is going on under the bank's, I think it's the Bank Secrecy Act, you're responsible to know your customer in a situation like that to shut that down. So if J.P. Morgan Chase didn't shut it down, it was because they were the senior partner. So you have at the train tracks, whether it's the payment systems or the transactional systems, the banking systems, the New York Fed is the depository for the U.S. government. That means that all the transactions aggregate and go through the New York Fed member banks and ultimately through the New York Fed, so they see everything. If you have access to that data, you won't see everything. I'll never forget one Wall Street fellow who insisted on the Mexican bailouts, that the money had just never left J.P. Morgan Chase because you had the government or the IMF paying the money for the Mexican bailouts, and then it just went to other creditors within the J.P. Morgan system and never just never went to Mexico. So, at the top, whether it's the defense contractors running the payment systems or the bank running the transaction systems, they have a very tight control. One reporter, I'll never forget, who was sort of trying to understand narcotics trafficking, had lunch in the 90s with a very senior guy from the DEA who said, look, all the wire transfers batch and go through the New York Fed. They know where every dime is.
So in other words, if people were genuinely trying to find out where the missing trillions went and how to get them back, how would you get this data as maybe a member of the government? Would you have to subpoena the information?
Well, theoretically, the banks are responsible to have all the data, or the defense contractors are responsible to have all the data. Now there are questions of how many years and how long they keep the data. You know, I would note that after Dr. Skidmore published his report on the missing money being up to $21 trillion, or I think it was $18 trillion at that point, it was reported a week or two later that there was a fire at the New York Fed. 100 fire trucks down on Wall Street because a fire had broken out on the roof because somebody on a Saturday night was using a fireplace in the basement of the building that was very old and had been used for a long time. What a coincidence. Anyway, so those records are supposed to be there, and if they're not there and are supposed to be there, those institutions are liable. So I would say whatever the amount of money is that's missing from the federal government, the New York Fed and those defense contractors are liable if they intentionally executed illegal transactions, which they clearly did. You know, now that we've created the laws that says, oh, in the future all those transactions are legal, you know, by some mysterious process, mm-hmm. which is in violation of all the financial management laws, you know, we're now in Never Never Land. Here's what I think, so let's get back to what we can do. I think every person who has retirement savings in this country, in the United States or in Europe, can start to ask questions about why are our financial institutions and pension funds buying securities when the money may be disappearing out the back door and there's not an acceptable standard of financial accountability?
Absolutely.
Because if I'm a citizen, but I'm also a pension fund beneficiary, my pension fund is being used to turn my actual savings into an empty shell liability for which I, as a taxpayer, am responsible. So I have the ability to talk to my pension funds. I have the ability to talk to any investor that, you know, that is managing or investing in any of these securities, whether... So if you take Lockheed Martin, you know, if they're buying shares of Lockheed Martin and they're buying treasury securities that are involved in these operations, I mean, it's you've got all of this... Wait a minute. Got raisin. you've got... You've got a situation where we are profoundly disassociated from where our own personal money is going and what it's doing, and we have the power to bring transparency to that and ask questions. So I think it depends. Every person listening to this, if you're in a pension fund, if you have savings that are invested in any of these things, you have the power to ask questions. And whether it's, you know, whether investing in treasuries is responsible given the missing money, or whether it's complicity in targeted individuals or other operations, you have the ability to ask questions of the investment community. And this has never been brought back up to the investment community, and it's a very appropriate time to do it. And the reason is, right now the investment community is making a push for environmental, socially responsible, and governance criteria. They're making a big push to prove that corporations can be responsible to act as productive citizens. And that's the perfect time to raise the question as to whether human torture is responsible behavior for a corporation.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I think the other thing that people have to remember, this is something that Karen Melton Stewart also was always publicizing, is that it's one thing to make laws and declare illegal activity and organized crime to be legal, but there's it has already been tested in the Supreme Court. And I think it was her case of Marbury versus Madison, maybe. And it said that, you know, anything that any law that contradicts the Constitution is null and void. This is right. What it all goes back to. So you can't just make it up as you go along. It has to, you know, agree with the Constitution. If you come up with something egregious that doesn't agree, it is null and void, whatever your status, whatever you say.
Right.
You know?
And so I would assume, I believe that the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board policy is null and void. I don't think that a policy advisory board has the authority to approve a structural reengineering of the U.S. Constitution and all the financial management laws.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very clever Masonic trick, but it's not legal.
Exactly.
I mean, it sounds great, but it's not legal. The problem, though, from the standpoint of the people of running things, is they now have a system where the economic model is not sustainable. And so, you know, they're running an official reality and then they're running reality. And they're pouring money into covert operations and they want to keep it secret. And so the big issue here is not how does the money work. The big issue here is why are so many of our operations secret and how do we bring transparency to them?
Actually, one step regarding transparency, also publicized by Karen Melton Stewart, is that it is also the case that it's unlawful to classify something to cover up crime. So it is absolutely not allowed to use classification to cover up wrongdoing. And as soon as we have reason to believe or we have evidence that there's actually organized crime taking place behind the scenes, there's the torture of Americans by other Americans or maybe government contractors like Lockheed Martin taking place, classification can be lifted. Because in that case, classification is being used to cover up, not just organized crime, I would say,
right.
Cover up crimes against humanity. And especially in the case of crimes against humanity, you know, you can take drastic measures to stop that. And I think that's now the time to actually take these drastic measures. But the real question is...
Well, but here's the thing. If 5% of American citizens simply ask the questions of their banks, so you have your bank. Your bank's buying Treasury securities. Why is your bank buying Treasury securities when $21 trillion is missing and the federal government refuses to comply with the laws for financial disclosure? So why are your banks participating? Then your pension funds, why are your pension funds basically laundering your savings out through the government back door, the pension funds? Then you have a right to ask the board of directors and CEOs of every corporation or bank involved, whether it's JP Morgan Chase or Lockheed Martin or any of these companies. You know, certainly if you look at what happened on the bailouts and the running of securities, mortgage fraud, it's highly centralized. So we've had the power all along to do that, and we're not doing that. I was just at a conference in Italy where, and the focus of the conference was bringing peace, and I basically said, you have the power to, you know, to enforce peace now. Just start asking every investor and bank in this country why they're financing war and why, you know, how you stop it. Most of the people there basically expressed the fact that they were too scared to do that.
I think this is where we need strength in numbers.
Right.
I think this is the point. And I understand that very well. As somebody who's being targeted viciously, I completely know the consequences of asking even the most benign questions. But I think we have to... You said earlier that... you know, now the economic model is not sustainable anymore. I would say by now we're at the stage where it's not survivable for much longer unless you really take drastic measures. You know?
Well, no system can operate without law.
Yeah.
And so what we're watching is With the changes from the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board, we are watching a complete breakdown of the law. Because what we're saying is a group of secret people, by a secret process, can finance whatever they want. And as they finance it, we're liable. Because they're issuing securities for which an American citizen is liable, and moreover is floating around in a global system whereby the whole global financial system is dependent on it. So you have zero accountability, zero disclosure, maximum secrecy, and a system which is essentially out of control. It's lawless. And that can't last forever. So the question is, what do we do about it? And to me, we have to bring the law. And you start by holding a whole world of people accountable to look at, understand, and discuss what's going on. In other words, we can't change this without a change in consciousness. And I think it's very, very important that the investment community face their complicity in what's going on.
Absolutely.
And to me, the environmental, socially responsible, and governance standards give you an opportunity to do that. Now, let me talk in defense of the people who've tried to keep everything secret. If you go back and study the history of people deciding, no, we're going to keep everything secret, you know, they're very afraid that the average person can't cope with the truth. They really are afraid of it. But the other thing is, having kept everything so secret since the end of World War II, they're terrified of the liability issues if the truth comes out. And, you know, and there are legitimate concerns there. So it's not so simple to just say, okay, let's make everything transparent. What I will tell you is, given where things are going, whatever the horrible ramifications of making things transparent is, to me it's better than not. But the reality is, we can't solve the problem by saying all the people in the system are bad. Because if you look at the complicity of the general population, we're all complicit.
Absolutely.
Now, you know my red button story.
Yes.
Okay, so in 2000, in the summer of 2000, 99 out of 100 spiritually evolved people did not want to push the red button and stop hard narcotics trafficking in their neighborhood tomorrow because it would raise their taxes.
Oh, yeah. I think these people need to be told that unless you press the red button and unless you take some hits, or at least rearrange your investment and your life choices, you will not necessarily survive for particularly long. And if you do, your children will end up severely genetically damaged. And this I can say with 100% confidence because, for example, the new 5G system, it is damaging the DNA. It is damaging the health. And in the case of young people and especially young children, it's irreparable.
Well, but here's the thing. You've got to decide between freedom and... you know, it's do you want to be free or do you want life to be convenient?
You know, this is a very, very complex question. You know, if I had to summarize it in my own understanding of what you just described, you know, I mean, as I'm a physicist, I'm a systems analyst. What you've described is exactly deep capture by organized crime. And I think we started out with saying,
but it's not just the government. It's every human being.
Yeah, every layer of society. That's right.
Every layer of society. What I discovered during the litigation, my 11 years of litigating with the federal government, you know, it was my neighbors. It was my family. It was everyone.
Yeah.
And everyone was networked. Everyone was incentivized. What you see most people faced with is, do I do what is responsible for my wife, my children, you know, in the next year, or do I object to this and it's going to be a Pyrrhic victory? You know, you're constantly being asked to choose between a Pyrrhic victory and the well-being of your family, and people feel a serious fiduciary obligation to their family, and they also feel that they don't want you know, they don't want to betray their family in a way that won't really bring change or do any good.
Mm.
And that's why, to me, the most important thing is transparency, because we need to see what's going on and we need to be able to find each other and talk about it.
Absolutely.
And we need to understand, you know, this, the big secret at the bottom of all of this is the reason you can push the red button and stop our dependency on organized crime is because our dependency on organized crime is making us weaker. It's destroying productivity. It's shrinking the pie. And in fact, there is a way to turn that around. I call it turning the red button green. There is a way to make money pushing the red button.
Mm.
Because ultimately, a society is healthier and stronger. You know, we are destroying the health of our economy with narco dollars. So, you know, we're basically destroying our economic health just the way we're destroying the physical health. And so there is absolutely a way. If we were free to reoptimize government investment, government money without secrecy, you can significantly increase wealth on planet Earth. But the problem is it's very hard to centrally control it. And that brings us back to the question of who's really in charge and you know, and how can, you know, why are they behaving the way they're behaving? Which is a question I've never been able to ask. I've spent my whole life trying to answer that question and I can't answer.
I think at the very top, there are also feedback mechanisms whereby they tie each other into a strategy and they feel they can't step out. You know,
it's true.
If we feel we can't press the red button, they will feel even less, you know, an ability to do that, because things usually get very intense at the top. So if we feel the pressure down on the street level, they will, you know, be tied in with their life.
Well, look at the story of the crucifixion. The crowd voted for the criminal, right?
Yeah.
Pontius Pilate knew crucifixion was bad politics. He didn't want to do it. He was looking for a way out. So he offered them, you know, but the crowd voted for the criminal.
Yeah.
And so if you're at the top, my experience with people at the top is they've constantly had the rug pulled out for them by the general population, who will always vote for the criminal because the criminal will give them more money.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, this is a... That's why you have to look at this as a 360-degree ecosystem, and everybody's got to be held responsible. It's not just, you know, if I'm highly ethical in my life, but I'm making a fortune on Lockheed stock,
yeah,
you know, and saying, I'm really ethical, you know, I don't know about that. Well, you've made it your business not to know.
Yeah, I think, you know, based on what I've researched, there is now a real incentive to cycle out of organized crime, because the business plans they are running in Europe and the US will seriously damage the health of the vast majority of the population in a way that they cannot protect themselves. You know, you cannot block out cell tower radiation or Wi-Fi or even the satellite-based, you know, energy devices. And they are hitting us all, so... You know.
Well, I would say it another way. Our society, we're entering a period where there is clearly an effort to prototype, you know, every gradation from a 100% robot to 100% human, but everything in the middle, from a robotic-like human to a human-like robot. And the labor systems are being redesigned so that you can manage robots and human in the same set of legal and financial systems. And clearly the people at the top are trying to figure out, you know, what's the optimal mix of labor between 100% robot and 100% human, which means we're going into a world where the human race is being returned to overt slavery. Now, with mind control, they're not as aware of that. So I would say this is a very propitious time to object.
Yes. Maybe the last chance we have, you know, before neurotech takes over.
You know, as I told you earlier, I thought it was an emergency in 1990.
Yeah.
And it took a while, but I've basically calmed down and I look at the situation very spiritually. Because ultimately, I think the current effort, whether it's the ionization of the sky or the integration of robots into the human labor system, you know, I think the whole thing is basically fundamentally too spiritually evil to survive. So I don't think it's going to work. But I don't underestimate the harm that can be done while that tsunami runs through our society.
Yeah, I think this is exactly the point when people have to think, do they really want to find out how pernicious and how evil it can get?
Or... Well, but here's the question. Every person listening to this is financing this.
That's right.
Every person listening is financing this. You are banking at a bank that is buying the Treasury securities that is financing this. You know, whether it's paying Lockheed's contract or financing the black budget or financing the targeted individual, you know, or financing NSA. Every one of us is financing this at our bank, at our brokerage account, at our pension fund. And every one of us has the ability to ask the questions of the governance structures of our bank, of our pension fund system, of the different companies involved. Every one of us has the ability through our questions to change this in dramatically positive ways. And the question is, why aren't we doing it?
Exactly. And you know, what I also take away from this is that it sounds like there was the red button option, but now you've described ways whereby you don't even have to press the red button. You just have to press the buttons of your, you know, pension fund manager.
You don't have to press the red button. You just have to turn on the lights.
That's right.
You just have to turn on the lights. Because we're all doing this together. And, you know, it's like an orchestra playing in the dark. So the first thing we need to do is turn on the lights and then look at each other and say, why are we doing this? And then say, okay, well, what? You know, it's like a whole room of people who are doing the waltz. We can't just one by one change the tango. We have to turn on the lights and say, how about, you know, if you look at what we're doing with this waltz here, how about if we, you know, and then everybody, you know. So there needs to be a conversation at a much wider level. So just turn on the lights. You know, and part of turning on the lights is saying, you know, we don't have to do this. There's another way. And in fact, that way produces far more wealth. You know, destroying our human capital, destroying our intellectual capital, destroying our society, destroying our culture may not be the most profitable way to build a wealthy future.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we don't have to. Let's talk about this.
So, really,
so just turn on the lights and raise the vibration level. You know, open your mind to the possibility. We're willing for things to work out. We're willing to have a human future. We're willing to not be destroyed by artificial intelligence. Absolutely. We're willing.
Do you think if the message gets out that we can have a serious change by Christmas? I mean, we have, what, we've got 6 or 7 weeks until Christmas. If we really get the message out, we call up our you know, contacts and we say, listen, you know, my wish for Christmas this year is that you just call up your pension fund manager and ask the following questions. I guess my task now is to really query the victims and try to pull out all the companies who they have detected of being involved, and then let's just ask them.
I would pull out all the companies, and then I would pull out all of their proxy statements, and I'd say we all buy a share and go to their annual meetings and start asking questions.
Now that's what I wish for Christmas. One share in Lockheed Martin so that I can go to their meeting and ask. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, before you go, you know, write the letters to the board members and post it so they can't just keep you out of the meeting. And,
absolutely.
You know, we'll talk a little bit more about strategy. But that's why I think, you know, we've got to identify every publicly traded stock that is involved in these activities.
Hmm.
Because, you know, it so much of this depends on secrecy. And that's why if you reverse the secrecy, there's a chance to really shift things.
Absolutely. I think this was, you know, probably one of the scariest and at the same time one of the most motivating interviews I had. You know, it's a real eye-opener. And I think you as a financial expert, I think you completely underestimate the ignorance that even educated people have about the financial system.
So here's my message. Anyone can understand the financial system if they want to. And it's essential because it's part of the energy system. You know, the financial system is just a way for humans to trade their time and energy through time and space. Anybody can understand it. If you look at, you know, the targeted individuals, they're all exceptionally intelligent. But they think they're not interested in the financial system because it's, you know, those horrible people over there, and we don't want to know anything about that. Money is a great mapping tool. It's a way of mapping out what's really going on in a society. It's a way of mapping reality. And so much of this is engineered through the financial system. It's not the only, you know, mind control to a certain extent is replacing the financial system as a control system. So, but it's still a very important control system. Anybody can understand it. And if we bother to understand it and then integrate accountability into the financial system, that's where you get the power to change things. So, because if you look at who's, you know, it's interesting. We just had one of the people interested in the Secret Space program just did a series. There's a squabble over trademarks and copyrights in the Secret Space program world, and the team that was trying to trademark apparently there's, I don't know if they're still trying to trademark it or not. They're trying to trademark SSP, which is an acronym used for Secret Space Program. Anyway, the people who had done that for many years had been promoted on Gaia TV. And so I went to the proxies. I went to Gaia's website and pulled up their proxies and looked at who's financing them and sent it out to the group and said, you know, don't worry about these guys. Let's talk about who's really financing this. You know, and why are they financing it? Because, again, you had a lot of the big investors. You had BlackRock. You had Fidelity. You had Ariel Investments, who George Lucas's wife was. And I think she worked, she was chairman or had a senior position at DreamWorks as well. You know, so they're financing this, what I believe is Secret Space Program disinformation. Well, why are they doing that? Because they don't want the real information to come out. They're running big treasury securities operations. They're, you know, they own lots of Lockheed Martin stock, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is the kind of accountability. The dots have to be connected. Yeah. So my attitude is, if you're a targeted individual, if you're being tortured, this is a significant pathway to relief if enough of us do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you, Catherine, because this was an eye-opener. It was an education, you know, and an eye-opener and
really?
A motivation in one, yes. Because I have been looking at this and I just, you know, I don't know enough about finance and the mechanisms. And sometimes for many targeted individuals, it comes down to the basic information sources. We don't even know where to look. And for you, it's obvious. You know, you can immediately point us to the right databases to query. And you're right, if all the victims do that as a matter of routine and course to investigate who is doing it and snap out of learned helplessness, all of us, and think, no, we can take it back. They don't have the right to do this.
The people who are doing this are being paid to do it.
Yeah.
Which means they're being financed.
That's right.
Right. So follow the money. I put out on my Twitter feed this week one of my favorite quotes. He says, it's Eric Ambler. He says, I don't want to know who shot the bullet. I want to know who paid for the bullet.
That's exactly right. Well, thank you very much, Catherine. So,
you're welcome.
This was an absolutely fascinating interview. So thank you very much. And I think everybody who was listening, it is our duty to take the advice from Catherine Austin Fitz, go out and investigate and find
who's
finances.
Doing this?
Find out who's doing this?
And who's financing them? How does the money work?
Thank you.